Welcome back to Cairo Nights. On the line right now, Hannah, Scott. Hannah, I need you to come on because of what Inslee said today when it came to his recommendation for the masks. I'm not a fan. I don't like
Not a fan of the recommending of the masks?
No.
Let me tell you what. I heard your show yesterday, and I heard your story about your grandmother. Riveted. I could not turn you off. Not that I normally do. Oh my, I'm Italian, right? So I have my Nona who passed away.
Yeah.
She was terrifying. So terrifying. And I was totally relating. She was much better when I got older, but
well,
great story.
Thank you.
And I loved how it tied into the CDC. I was like, where's he going with that?
Yeah. So, Grandma Jay was, deeply, deeply mentally ill. And, she was just transfixed with the idea that Satan was in our house at all times, just transfixed with it. So much so that we had three basements in our home. It was a home that had been built out over the years. And for some reason, every owner who bought the house said, I'm going to put another basement in this house.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, right. So it had three basements. And in one of the basements, there was an abandoned well that had had a steel grate put on top of it because it had run dry effectively. And she was convinced that the devil had a direct portal from hell directly into our home. So she would put salt around the space in the floor that she believed that the devil was coming.
Right. She watched, that's an Amityville Horror storyline right there.
Yeah. So, well, but she was, she was really fixated on it. And it, in many ways, kind of painted the way that I live my life now, which is that I don't have a lot of tolerance for tomfoolery.
Right. Yeah. Total, like, skepticism and no tolerance. You can see, right? You've got the clear glass.
Yeah. Yeah. And if, just as another example, like she didn't want us to have cats in the house because she thought that cats were another conduit for the devil, right?
Familiars. They're familiars for witches.
So my mom and I begged my mom. I said, please let me get cats. Please let me get cats. So at one point in time in my life, I had four cats that my grandmother hated. But thankfully, she left me alone with my kitties. Can I ask you a question, though, before we get right into the Chief Diaz came out the other day and he said that only 16% of the shootings are, did you hear about this? He said only 16% of the shootings are gang violence. You reported in LA. I've reported in Central California. When I hear about some of these shootings, I don't know if it's because you and I are former Californians. Every time I hear it, I go, oh, shooting on the freeway? That's a gang initiation, right?
Right.
I hear, oh, a couple of guys got into it on some street corner. Not in a home, but on a street corner, I think, oh, that's a territory thing. But then Diaz came out and he said, no, not so much. I don't know if he's, I don't think he's lying, but
no,
maybe
he's not.
I don't think maybe he doesn't have the same, maybe the task force isn't the same as it is in California or the gang.
The situation with gangs in general, I don't think would be the same here as in California.
Right.
The official kind of gangs like you would be used to from LA or from Central California and Oakland, something like that, is, I think, more in like the Tacoma area.
Okay.
As far as Pacific Northwest goes, there are, you know, I think what we see in Seattle, there certainly are gangs. There's certainly retaliatory things that go on, but they're not always a formal gang, if you will, related, right? You've got young kids who live in certain neighborhoods where maybe there's, you know, different kinds of activity. They all have access to weapons for some reason, it seems. And somebody says, this is what actually some of the investigators I talked to a couple of weeks ago told me, is that a lot of these beefs start up on social media with one person saying something and then it comes back and then somebody ends up shot because people is what they say. Young people in these neighborhoods don't have any skill to resolve their issues. So that's why you heard Chief Diaz the other day come out and tell everyone to tell their loved ones, their family members, their kids, let's learn how to resolve your issues differently and not pick up a gun.
See, okay, that clears it up for me because I was convinced after that press conference. I was like, is Diaz not, do they not have the same thing? Because when I lived in California, again, you hear something like that and instantly you recognize it as being territory, drug related, whatever it is. And then that just shocked me that Diaz was like, nope, not that bad. So,
and there's certainly, and I don't mean to say that there's not a gang issue in Seattle. There are countless people. A young woman several years ago shot on Rainier Avenue South just driving home. I interviewed her grandmother. Girl had nothing to do with any gangs and ended up in the crossfire somehow. And others who've been killed, mistaken identity kind of things that is related to gangs. And certainly in Des Moines to the south and Kent and Federal Way, I did a ride along with an officer down there a couple of years back. And there's certain tags where you know that he translated all the tagging for me to tell me what that means, like the signs. And that's a call out of this gang, which means we're going to have some trouble later because now they're going to go at it. So that stuff does happen. It's just not as wide and all the time. That's what the story is behind it.
I see. Okay.
Does that help?
That helps a lot, yeah, because I realize that sometimes I have to turn off my California brain in the Pacific Northwest, because in California, everything is gang violence. Inslee came
never
out.
Never drive with your headlights. Mess with your headlights.
Never. Right? Never, not once. I did that one time. I was followed for 20 minutes before I got to a police station. A lot of people don't know that. I hated it.
I got lost in Compton when I was like 25, driving back from the airport.
Nice.
All I could think about was don't mess with your headlights.
Yeah.
And I backed down low, but it was fine.
Yeah. You never high beam anybody. Inslee came out today and it was, he was in a very nice suit. He was, looking very dapper. And, then he says, "Hey, I'm going to go ahead and follow the CDC regulations." But more specifically, he was talking about K-12 and indoor spaces,
which
and things like that.
Which is really nothing new. So let me cut through what exactly happened today. Not a lot, really. It was a significant warning about what we could end up seeing if more people don't get vaccinated. And he followed the CDC guidance, which was strongly encouraging all of the people who, even if you're vaccinated and you're indoors in a public space, in a place where there's, you know, a lot of transmission of this Delta variant going around, which is, you know, Douglas County, Snohomish County has a high rate right now, then consider, he said, masking up because that's how you're going to protect everybody. But other places, you know, in New York, you've got all of these mandates coming down right now. We didn't see that here, which is, I think, a bit of a shift, right? Governor Inslee has been the guy out in front, the guy with the more strict stuff usually. And he didn't do that today.
Yeah, but I feel like, and I said this at the beginning of the show, I feel like this is just, you know, you dip your toe in the jacuzzi and you acclimate a little bit. And then all of a sudden you're sliding right in. That's what I feel like is going to happen. Now, I'm open to being wrong. I've been wrong hundreds, if not thousands of times in my radio career and in my life. But for some reason, I just don't trust it. You know what I mean?
I don't believe that you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I guess from way back at the beginning of COVID, when he was doing these press conferences daily, I started to recognize when he would say things, I'd be like, "Oh, okay, here's what that means. I guarantee you we're going to have this shut down. School's going to be canceled like tomorrow. This is what's going to be here." And it was just kind of like, right, like my take on stuff, my reading between the lines. I was sometimes right, not always.
Yeah.
Think that I would be shocked if we don't have some restrictions, mandates coming down the pike. He said today that there was going to be a lot of discussions going on over the next few days, getting some input from public and stakeholders. And then also, he said everything's on the table, right? So it could be some county to county stuff. So if a high vaccination rate in a county, maybe you're going to see some restrictions. But he got really burned when he did those county by county things before. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. And I keep thinking about, and this is just my kind of, again, my overactive conspiratorial brain. I don't think many people can handle restrictions at the level that they were, let's say, 4 months ago. I think people will pop if that happens. And I don't say that lightly. I think that you will start to see. All right, I'll give you an example. When I was in college, there was a tremendous amount of talk about racism at my college. Now, I went to the most liberal institution outside of Berkeley that you could possibly.
I was going to say Berkeley.
I went to University of California, Santa Cruz.
Yes, you did then.
There was an incident where a young woman of color alleged that someone had been posting Nazi stuff around the parking lots and spray painting things things like that. And she alleged that she was the one who was being targeted because she found a swastika that had been spray painted directly behind her car, and then also a swastika posted near her door. So somebody was going around and doing this. Now, make a long story short, turns out it was off-campus hooligans who were coming up and trying to scare people. They weren't actually Nazis or white supremacists. They were just trying to...
And had no idea she existed.
Right? Yeah, no idea she existed whatsoever. But for about 2 weeks, everyone was deeply concerned about black men and women being targeted on campus. Mm-hmm. So a group of kids thought it'd be wise for them, for whatever reason, to put on a bunch of chains and carry huge logs of wood to symbolize, and I mean huge, like 10-foot long logs and these huge heavy chains, and walk around Santa Cruz to symbolize the burden of racism. Now, these were all white people.
Oh, no.
So, why I bring up that story is to say this. When people get convinced of a certain thing, they can act in extreme ways that later make them look foolish. So, as an example, I think that if you lock everybody down again, I think you might start to see some of the walking into Target without the mask on, coughing in people's faces, walking into a 7-Eleven. I don't know what it is, but you might see people start doing these big, dramatic acts of defiance in an attempt to try to... I don't know, convince people of something or show people.
No, it's true. I mean, even before under the lockdown, we had like confrontations, big confrontations with like small groups of protesters against masking, getting in the face of people. Like, I think it was a Bothell grocery store,
yeah,
Whole Foods or something. And you're like, what? Because they chose to wear a mask. Like it was very extreme and people were very frustrated. So I think you definitely, there's still just as much divisiveness as there was, I think, a year ago. I mean, I don't think that you'll see the level of lockdown that we had kind of even 4 months ago, because I don't think you can really, you can't explain the need for that. Right. I mean, there's Delta, there's issues, but if it protects those fully vaccinated, largely, you can't be shutting down the economy statewide. That would be, first of all, unwelcome. It would be bad for the economy. And it would, what's the point then of getting vaccinated if you shut everything down?
Yeah, and I say that about the mask recommendation, but I appreciate you offering a kind of another perspective on this, Hannah. And the last thing I wanted to talk to you about before we have to get out of here is there's a bunch of money, a bunch of COVID money that's going to be going towards the court system now.
Right, and this is COVID Supplemental Budget 8 for the King County Council.
Ah.
They've been doing in all of, you know, for the last year. And it's the last round of federal dollars that came from the federal government that they have to use in a very specific way. Right. It's the federal government puts ways that you have to use it on. And it's all told, it was like $390 million. A lot of that goes to helping with evictions and all kinds of different things. But a chunk of it is going to this ridiculous backlog we have in the King County court system of cases. And that's civil, criminal. There's 200 murder cases backlog right now.
Wow.
Right. So there's a lot going on. And then they said, I think at County Council, 400 sexual assault cases, the average age of those victims, 16, that are just lingering. And that's got all, there's all kinds of problems there. So they upped it. It was going to be $31 million split amongst the courts themselves, like your judges and district and superior courts, the prosecutors, and then the public defenders. They upped that to $42.5 million. And that's going to help the King County prosecutor, he said, get 60 to 80 staffers, attorneys, victim advocates, and all of that he needs, and pay for it for about 3 years and get through this backlog to get back to the smaller, much smaller backlog we had to begin with.
Wow. So I was talking to my wife about this earlier today because she is, she's a therapist, and basically she helps pregnant moms who are in jail give birth to healthy, sober babies outside of jail.
Right.
And then the state lets them keep their babies. She's got a client who was supposed to go to court 2 years ago. Of course, COVID rolled around 18 months ago, so the entire process got slowed down. She's got two kids that she's trying to get back. And because her case is backlogged, because it's set back so far, she's basically been in limbo with her kids. She is looking at somewhere in the neighborhood between 5 and 40 years for drug trafficking. Not my wife, but this Kirk client.
Right.
Right. And she now, that client is trying to raise her two kids to the best of her ability while also trying to maintain her sobriety, while also trying to hold down a job, while having 40 years. Now, technically, what I think is going to happen is she's going to go to court. The judge is going to say, did you go to rehab? Are you working with CPS? Are you working with your social worker? Right. Here's 2 months of probation. Congratulations, right. You're on your way. But because the court system has been delayed for so long, she has now spun herself up into this position, sure, where she's convinced that she's going to go to jail for 20 years.
Right.
So Sarah, as her therapist, is trying to bring her down.
Just come down. But, because that's what you do.
Yeah.
Right? You just get all paranoid.
Right.
Who knows what's going to happen? Plus, criminal justice in our state right now, you never know exactly how that's going to go. So this money is a big help, and it'll help right away. Literally, the King County prosecutor on my interview with him, he's like, we are hiring. We bring on good people.
Wow.
And so the funding is for 3 years. We're going to try to find a way to keep you on after that and all of this. So it's a big, big help.
Hannah Scott, in the last, let us just say, 45 seconds that we have together, do you have any final thoughts on the news cycle thus far? Because I'm in this weird place where the summer news cycle is really slow, punctuated by moments of extreme panic. It always happens between July and August when everyone's on vacation. Super
right?
Slow. We're talking about cats hanging from bridges and whether or not pregnant women should be playing in the Olympics or not.
Right? First of all, for me, it never slows down. I am constantly busy. And right now, preparing for it, we've got election. We've got budgets coming up at the King and Seattle councils. So there's a lot going on. But honestly, I feel like I haven't had a break since January of 2020.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to do a little bit of Ask Me Anything in the text line 98973. We'll be right back after this. Thanks very much, Hannah Scott.
Thank you.
Is the way to do it. This segment's called Ask Me Anything. We were doing mailbag for a while, but I forgot to open up the Gmail. You want to send us an email, 973nights@gmail.com. But for right now, for practicality's sake, ask us a question, any question that comes to your mind. 989873 is the State Roofing text line. Shane Peterson, we have a guest in the studio. Do you care to introduce us while we are waiting for people to text in?
Yes, absolutely. We have Jacob here with us today, who is one of the new board operators here at Cairo Radio. Jacob, say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody. What's up, Jack?
Hi, Jacob. How you doing tonight, buddy? What made you want to get into terrestrial radio as such a young man, my friend?
You know, I've always wanted to work in radio, and I got an opportunity to start doing some board ops, so I'm learning all the shows, and I'm hanging out with Shane tonight.
So when you say that you've always wanted to do radio, like, for example, I wanted to do radio, but I ended up working at a theater as a projectionist for a couple of years. And then I, you know, had a very successful career in drug addiction for about 10 years. I was very good at that. And I was a musician, and then I went back to school, and then I got a degree, and then I got a couple more degrees, and then eventually I got into radio. For you, are you saying that this was something that when you were a little teeny tiny Jacob listening to the radio, you said to yourself, one of those days, I'm going to be that guy?
You know, when I was a little Jacob, I kind of did hear a talk show host and thought, you know, one of those days I want to be Jacob. I want that to be me. But then I got older and I realized I didn't really know what I was doing and kind of changed my mind a bunch of times. And I graduated college a little over a year ago, and I DoorDashed for a while. That was my thing when
Brutal.
Everything was shut down. That's how I made my money. But
Brutal.
Now I'm here, and still trying to get the hang of it, though.
Yeah, it can be tough, man. You know, when I first started working in radio, I worked... So this is what happened. There was a little radio station where I used to live, and I emailed the owner of it because it was just a one... You know, it wasn't like a major corporation or anything like that. It was just one guy who owned it. So I sent him this email, and I wanted to sound really professional. So when I found it a while back, and I was reading it, but I sounded like such a tool. You know, I was like, I understand that everyone starts at the bottom, but I'd love to work my way up, you know, that kind of thing. And then over time, I think about maybe 48 hours later, he sent me an email back. And he says, well, I don't need to hire anybody, but if you want to come and intern for us, you can do that. So I go, okay, that's fine. So I show up and I worked for free for weeks, which I later found out was illegal. And eventually they said, you know, hey, we, you know, do you want to answer phones and do you want to board op and all this other stuff? And when I first got hired, I was making $10.50 an hour to be this just like a lackey. You know what I mean? I was picking up the phones and I was kind of working the board and I was board operating for that. We're like a Rush affiliate, Rush Limbaugh affiliate. So then I was in that position for a while, and I was like board opping that show and everybody else's show, and I hated it. But I eventually got enough mic time to throw a tape together, and that's just kind of the trajectory that it led me down. You know what I mean? Like I just had to start somewhere at that station, even though I hated it. And later, I sued the owner for tons and tons of money, and I won because he had me improperly classified, not as an employee. So it just goes to show you, Jacob, that even if you don't think you're going to make a lot of money in radio, eventually maybe you can sue somebody and make a lot of money.
So looks like that'll be my strategy to start making money. I can just sue somebody
Not Cairo, not Bonneville, because that's a great company. But you really gotta find like a real hole in the wall radio station that's run by a terrible human being. And then when you ask him for a $1 raise, because the federal minimum wage went up from $11 to like $12 an hour, you say, hey, listen, boss. Actually, you do it like this. You go up to him and you say, hey, listen, boss. According to the federal government, you actually have to pay me $1 more than what you're actually paying me right now. So if you could just maybe, you know, I don't know, give me that extra dollar so that we're not all lying to the federal government and I can file my taxes properly, that would be great. And when he doesn't do that, when he tells you that he's going to fire everybody, you sue him and you make tons of money and you end up being a happy Jack Stein. How about that, Jacob?
Seems like a great idea.
Shane, where are you in all this? Shane, you're being unusually quiet during this segment.
I'm sitting with my head right over Jacob's shoulder like a mama hawk, just making sure that this board is nice and tight and running quite nicely, like we always do, Jack.
So the newscast just said that the Philippine president told to unvax. If you choose not to get vaxxed, I don't care, you can die anyway. What do you think of a leader saying that? Shane, I'm going to default to you on this. When you have a leader who comes out and who threatens people to stay in their homes, and when you have somebody who comes out and they say, listen, you can either get vaccinated or you can stay in your home. If you know anything about the Philippines, Duterte is a terrible human being. He's kind of an awful despot of a dictator. And in some ways, he's kind of a Trumpian figure. So, I mean, as far as somebody doing that, I think it just goes to show what power does to people. Don't you think, Shane?
It's gross and weird the fact that any leader would think that it's okay to actually go out and say that and treat their citizens like that. The thing is that, you know, we all have got our own, you know, different beat to our own drum, you might say. You know, it's definitely a little bit more prominent in, you know, some of these other countries. But I don't understand, like, how this guy even got into power. I don't know how their democracy works or how any of it works,
yeah,
or even
yeah.
if it is a democracy. But that's just completely uncalled for. I mean, let the people be who they're going to be. Let them do what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, I think that the whole COVID thing has really shown how power really affects people. And I don't just mean like Donald Trump or Joe Biden, but I mean small town type people. Like there's a park near my house, and it's where I take Boo Bear. And there's a woman that also takes her dog there. And she has... the most kind of COVID paranoia, I think, in some time. She still wears the mask. And if you get anywhere near to her, she vocally reminds you, she verbally reminds you to stay 6 feet away. That's how paranoid she is. But I kind of get the sense that she enjoys it. I kind of get the sense that she enjoys that kind of that feeling of being able to instill that really passive aggressive nature on people. Do you know what I mean? She's still wearing the mask, and she can still kind of keep people away from herself. And there's something that's almost like a psychological phenomenon, I guess. I think people get really high on that. And I think that's the same thing that's going on in the Philippines with that evil, awful despot. I think that he, in many ways, is enjoying the kind of intoxicating element of power and this idea that he can command people to stay in their homes and not to go anywhere. And he's like, oh, well, I'll take lawsuits. I'll suffer. You can try to sue me. You can throw everything you want at me. I think that that kind of braggadocio, that very Trumpian braggadocio, there is something that is inherently intoxicating about it. 360 says, oh, you mean like Inslee, how us unvaccinated are a danger to our community? Exactly. Exactly my point, 360. That there is a... there for Inslee, I think it comes from a much more kind of feminine energy type place. I think Inslee is a little bit more motherly when it comes to this kind of a thing. But there is this sense of immense power that we've given people. Look at Gavin Newsom. Look at Chris Cuomo. Look at any of these characters. Do you think that they just want to give it away? They've had it for the better part of what, 18 months, and so now you're going to come in and you're going to say, "Oh, you got to take this away?" No, absolutely not. I think that it's for the same thing for that woman at my dog park. It's the same thing for Jay Inslee. These people have become habituated to the idea of being in control. Now, there are a bunch of useful idiots out there who say to themselves, oh, yeah, no, I'll just go along with it. I'll just totally slide along with it, and I'll be totally fine with it. But for the rest of us, I think we acknowledge how increasingly irritating it is to have to deal with this. Says 206, says, Jack, you're amazing. You say all the stuffs we're all thinking but won't say. Yeah, exactly, 206. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back to wrap all of this up with Shane Peterson right after this. Voice is giving out on me. See, so now I'm drunk on power because I just banned another person, Shane. I said I felt bad about it yesterday, but I just banned another person from the text line, buddy. I had to get rid of him. I'm drunk with my own power, Shane. You have to stop me.
Oh, are people saying more jokes about Mama Stein again?
No, it was about my mom. Somebody said that I was the Joseph Goebbels of Seattle radio. And, I mean, as much as I appreciate a good Nazi reference, I refuse to engage with that. But this is the same character who said that I was not a real drug addict and also just in general is just a very mean and nasty person. So I'm glad to be rid of that person permanently on the text line. 206 says, Jack, good point. The Philippines President Duterte, Lisa Brooks, I know I'm saying that wrong.
This one is Duterte.
Yeah, Sarah always corrects me on that because she's Filipino. Yeah.
Okay.
And she's much more knowledgeable on this than I am. And I always want to say Duterte.
Yeah. There's another president named Duterte. Why can't I think? A Nicaraguan president? I forget. But there is a Duterte and a Duterte.
Yeah, and 206 says he is a Nazi and has execution squads on the streets, publicly killing people on the spot for even a small amount of drugs. Yeah, that was a thing. My dear sweet betrothed told me all about that. I said, what? I couldn't believe it. And then I looked into it, and that most certainly is a thing. Lisa Brooks, what is on your mind this lovely evening?
Well, I heard you tell the story about how you got into radio, and it got me thinking about... My story is not dissimilar.
Did you sue the guy for
no, I love
of
that part.
Dollars?
That was hysterical. But the way you started in radio, I got started when I was a teenager and I made a phone call to the morning disc jockey.
Yes.
At WFEC Radio in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And it was a station that catered to the city's black population. And it was my favorite station. I love the music. And I called and I said, I just want to let you know, I think your demographics are wrong. And he said, demographics? Are you in radio? And I said, no, but I'd like to be. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to do the news. This all happened exactly, I promise you, like I'm telling you. And then he says to me in that one phone call on a whim, he says, well, it just so happens we're going to have some openings in our news department really soon. And so I made, he said, get it here. And he gave me the news director's number. I called the news director. The news director said, well, you know, send me a tape. So on my little homemade cassette player, I read stories from the newspaper into that. And 2 weeks later, I got hired as a reporter.
Yes.
Covering the state capital of Pennsylvania. I mean, the learning curve has been enormous from that point. But anyway, it was an interesting experience. And I don't regret that phone call.
So when I was early in my radio career, I was desperate to find like a show. I really wanted to have my own show. So I just started applying kind of blindly to different radio stations and sending my tape out. And I sent one to WAOK in, in Georgia. And I got a letter back from the PD. And he goes, do you listen to this radio station? And I said, no. This is before I knew that you actually had to listen before you you listened to it. It's an all-black radio station. All-black hosts. Not that they were discriminating, but the culture and the vibe of it was like not Jack Stein. Yeah. It was like the Reverend Al Sharpton and like those kinds of characters with these deep, beautiful voices. And then you would have me coming on at, you know, 9 o'clock. I think that was the open spot that they had, was like the 9 o'clock spot. And they'd have me coming on at 9 p.m. being like, what's the deal with Joe Biden? So there's, I have so many embarrassing stories, aww, radio stories about applying in different places. So including here at Cairo, many, many embarrassing story. And I have no one to thank but Brian Buckaloo, Mike Salk, and Jason Rantz for taking a chance on a young whippersnapper out there with just a hope and a dream in his pocket. Shane Peterson, what's on your mind?
There's a few things on my mind, but the biggest thing that was on my mind today is I tried a new eating establishment, Jack. Have you heard of the Triple X Root Beer in Issaquah, Washington? Have you heard of it?
It's a classic. Oh, sure. I've been there many times. It's you loved it, right?
I went there for the first time today, and I ate so much food that I was literally uncomfortable for hours. Like, I'm just now starting to, like, move at, like, a regular person's pace. I had a foot-long hot dog today. Yeah. I had the giant root beer.
Yep.
And the thing about this place, Jack, that makes it so unique is that they have a root beer recipe that they've had and not changed since 1930. It is the best root beer I've ever tasted in my life. And I'm like severely missing it right now. And I'm honestly can't wait to go back. And Jack, you need to go try it one of these weekends, like when we go out to do something out here in the great Western Washington.
Well, I mean, Uncle Jay's got money now, so, you know, Uncle Jay can spend his money.
Yeah, so you can buy me lunch.
Yeah, what's this? It says, 253 says, what the heck is going on? Oh, they're upset about Inslee. Yeah, no, I get it, 253. We're all upset about Inslee. But to end the radio show on a happy, happy note, what's on my mind is that I am very thankful for my job. And I thought today's show was particularly good, if I can say that, to Lisa Brooks and to Shane Peterson and to Jacob, the new guy. So thanks, everybody, so very much. Shane Peterson, it's your turn to sign us off on a Wednesday evening.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So from all of us here at Cairo Nights to all of you back home, be safe, be happy, and you'll catch us here same time, same place, same old station.
Perfect. Nailed it. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye.
When you're in danger, take a look all around.